Interview with Mr. Ted McDermott, 5th of October, 1994. Mr. McDermott, where were you born?
I was born at 180 Castle Ray Street, Redfern. Now, it's not Castle Ray Street today, it's Charmer Street. But it's quite close, almost on top of the South Sydney Leagues Club, where that is now, towards Phillip Street, on the same side. The house is still there. There are two-storied houses. There's a terrace of them, and they are still there. But then the South Sydney Leagues Club, a lot of the places further on towards Redfern Street, they've all disappeared, but this terrace of houses is still there. But it used to be called Castle Ray Street. Now it's called Charmer Street.
And what year was that?
That was in 1925.
And did you grow up in Redfern?
Most of my life I did, my young life. Yes, I did.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother and two sisters, but they were not all born. Only my older sister was born in Redfern. My two youngest, my brother and sister, were born when we shifted out of Redfern.
All right, when did you shift out of Redfern?
That's a good question. Actually, I think one of them was born in Redfern. We shifted out when I was about 13, 14.
And where did you go then?
Well, we went from the house in Castle Ray Street, we went to a little house on the corner of Union Street and Phillip Street, Redfern. And from there, we went across to Walker Street, Redfern. From Walker Street, Redfern, we went to Rosebery.
What kind of a kid were you?
Not a bad kid, I don't suppose.
What kind of kid were you?
Oh, I think I was just a normal type of kid around Redfern. Possibly pampered a little bit more than most of the kids in Redfern. Mum was pretty fussy with us kids. And being the only boy at the time, I was probably, you know, spoiled a little bit.
And what was the usual sort of kid in Redfern?
About the same as myself, only some of them are all larrikins, including myself at times.
What are your earliest memories?
My earliest memories, I don't recall much of the time that we spent in Castle Ray Street, but I do recall some of the time we spent in the house in Union Street, on the corner of Union Street and Phillip Street. Mm-hmm. I went to George Street School, which was just down the road. I wasn't a bad kid at school. I wasn't a brilliant student, but I got along all right, you know. And some of my earliest memories are my school days at George Street School.
And what was that like?
It was okay, except for one teacher. He was rather an oddbod. I won't name him, but he used to have a habit of walking through the classroom, grabbing a handful of your hair and standing up in front of the class, you know. Because that's vastly different in those days to what it is these days. And it got to the point there with this teacher that one of the kids, there was a lad there named Les Humphreys, and I don't mind mentioning his name, but this teacher got that way this day and grabbed him by the hair and shook him, and he shook him by the head. He broke through him, dived straight out the window onto the balcony, and then jumped over the rail of the balcony and took off from school. And the teacher took off after him. And while he was out of the classroom, he used to have six canes to give you the six of the best, you know, and you used to hold your hand out and they'd go whack, whack, whack with the cane. And there were a few holes in the floor of so the kids, while he was out chasing Les Humphreys, they grabbed his canes and stuck them all down the hole in the floor, you know, and got rid of his canes that way. Well, that was a bit of a wild day there because he wasn't too happy when he came back. But I got pretty fond memories of George Street School. And, of course, at a later date, I went to Burke Street School and I went to Cleveland Street School. And I've got pretty good memories of both of them.
What makes them good? What are some of those memories?
I think it was mainly the kids that were there with us. And we were learning the 3 R's. Nothing like today. We didn't have computers, we didn't have calculators and things like that. And I think the teachers were far more dedicated than what they are today.
Okay, I'll ask a few questions about your family and just sort of the life that you had there. What sort of family do you come from?
I'm not sure that I understand what the...
Well, what did your father do for a living?
My father at the time, it was in the early...
So what did your father do for a living?
Well, in the early days, I'm not too sure what Dad did when I was a young child, a real young child, but I know, which I didn't know until a later date when I got a little, a few years onto my, you know, into my life, that both my father and my mother originally worked at a factory, Holbrook's, and Holbrook's was source people and jams, etc. and so forth like that, and I think from memory they were over in Burke Street in Waterloo. Then, at a later date, my father worked. There was a hotelier down in Sydney that had a hotel in Sydney, and he owned the bar concessions at the Royal Easter Show. And my dad worked at the Royal Easter Show when it was on. He also helped as a barman in the hotel in Sydney as a part-time job, as well as whatever his daytime job was at the time. My mother worked at the jam factory. I don't know for how long, and I don't even recall when she left there.
She was working most of your childhood?
A fair bit of it, yes. Yes, a fair bit of it.
What sort of a man was your father?
My father was a pretty good sort of a fella, but he was a tough dad, fairly strict. And I don't think it was because he wasn't... a good father or anything like that. I think it was the pressures of the living that made it difficult for him, because if you recall, around about the time I'm talking about was around about the Depression time. And certainly we never went short of food, but as I remarked to you before this interview, I can recall on many an occasion things were pretty grim, and we had bread and dripping and sop. That was our diet for the day, or maybe a couple of days. We had a pretty good life. We didn't seem to notice it because nobody was any different to us. We were all the same. Everybody was in the same boat at that time.
Was your parents able to keep him work in the Depression?
I was pretty young, as I say, at that particular time. I was only around 6 or 7 years of age, and I'm not too sure, but I don't think Dad worked right through the compression, the Depression. No, I couldn't say for sure. I was a bit too young.
But your mum, did your mum work through the Depression?
Part of it, I think, yes. Yes.
What sort of a woman was your mother?
My mother was a fantastic woman. Her two kids at the time come first, second and third.
Well, when you say that your father was tough and times were tough, How was that? I mean, tough today and tough then are different things. Can you describe what made him, what behaviour he had that?
Well, he didn't mince words. If he told you not to do anything and you did it, you're in big trouble and probably got a smack across the backside or a clip over the ear. When he spoke, it was law. That was it. Whether it was me, my sister, my mother, or anyone else, that was it. He didn't speak twice.
He was head of the house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And,
That's in the early days.
And what happened later?
Oh, well, when we got up to the stage where I'd grown into an adult, my mother had grown into a bit of an elder adult too, and she got the usual. She was the boss, you know, at a later date, much later date. Oh. But Dad was a good man, as well as tough. He was a good man. Mm. Not always fair, but he tried to be. But as I say it before, I said it, I think it was the pressures of the time and the worries that he had to try and make ends meet.
And with your mother, you say she put the kids first.
Second and third.
Yeah. And was she very warm?
My mother was a loving person. She was beautiful. She used to cuddle us up and look after us and nurse us. And if Dad went crook, she'd have a go back at Dad, and then she'd grab us and take us away and try to keep us, you know, safe. Mm. Not that he injured us badly or anything, but she tried to protect us from all that. Mm.
Were your parents religious?
Strangely enough, my mother was Church of England and my dad was a Catholic, and I didn't know that till I was about 30 years of age.
No,
he wasn't. They weren't religious.
Were they politically involved, do you know?
Not till the latter years. In the later years, of Mum wasn't politically involved at all, but in the later years, my dad was involved, not to any great extent. And I talk about the latter years when Dad had established himself in business, and I think his support for his political views were more financial than anything else.
Was that in the 40s? Are you talking about
that? Yeah, a little after the 40s.
What business did he get into?
My dad was a scrap metal merchant. He worked for himself, and he made quite a good fist of it. And at the same time, he was a registered bookmaker on the course. And I might add, before he was a registered bookmaker, in the rough old days, he was an SP bookmaker up in Walker Street, Waterloo. But then he progressed on to being a registered, licensed bookmaker on course. And he worked mainly at trots and dogs meetings. And when my dad passed on, I continued on in that train. And when I retired, my eldest boy continued on. He's since retired because of the failings at the race courses, people not going there anymore, etc., etc., etc. It's not viable anymore for bookmakers. But my dad was in the scrap metal business. That was his main business. And the bookmaking was a weekend and nighttime affair.
Have a lot of people coming to the house?
Not a lot of people, only relatives.
Where did he do his bookmaking?
He did it at Wentworth Park and Harold Park. Harold Park Trots, Harold Park Dogs, Wentworth Park Dogs. But originally, early in the piece, my dad travelled all over the state. Dapto, Bulleye, Newcastle, everywhere, wherever he could. My dad worked approximately 5 or 6 nights a week.
What about when he was SPing?
When he was SP bookmaking, he was up in Walker Street, Waterloo.
That was at your house?
No, it was my grandmother's house.
So he didn't do it at home?
No. And I might add that when we, in the scrap metal business, and in those days it was quite a common thing to have a lot of two-up games around. He also ran a two-up game for quite some time.
Where did he do that?
He did that. He had a business that you entered via a laneway to go into his business places off Elizabeth Street, Redfern, and you had to go through the big double gates opened up to let you into the place.
That's the scrap metal place?
That's the scrap metal yard, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you just have to wind your way through all the garbage and metal or whatever it was, and they had a little door cut in the side, and you used to go through that into the backyard of a house that was actually in Kettle Street, Redfern. And that's where they used to play their two-up, because they had cockatoos and all watching for the coppers and everything like that.
And was that in the 30s? Do you think the late 30s?
No, that was later. That was... I don't know how long it had been going, but I became aware of that possibly in the early 40s.
Right. You'd have been 15, 16.
Round about, yeah.
So he didn't start doing it until the 40s?
Oh, I say I wasn't aware of it until then, but it's possible he could have been. He could have been in that...
But you were kept away from it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What sort of discipline was used in the house?
Well, Dad ruled with a pretty heavy hand until the latter years. And then Mum took over the discipline, and there wasn't much discipline needed. There was only my eldest sister and myself up till my brother's 10 years younger than I am. And then... when he came along, and my youngest sister, she's 15 years younger than I am, they were treated differently by my father than what my eldest sister and I were, because I think that, like all of us, when we get married and have a family, we learn by our mistakes. And they had quite a happy childhood. So did we. Only they didn't get the discipline that we got.
You know, were you expected as a kid to contribute toward the family? Like, I've heard tales of people going around factories and scavenging things and wood. I mean, were you...
You mean financially?
Yeah, financially, or getting food and all different sorts of things. Were, as a child, were you involved in anything like that?
Never. Never. Yeah. As I say, my dad always provided for us. As tough as he was, he always provided. And sometimes it had to be bread and dripping and put a little bit of salt sprinkled on it or something like that, but it was always there. We never went without something.
And were you renting in Redfern?
We were living with my grandparents in Castle Ray Street, where I was born. When we went to Union Street and Phillip Street, yes, we were renting there. We were renting in Walker Street and until my father bought a house in Rosebery many years later.
And you were never evicted during the Depression? Your parents could always...
Never.
Can you remember any of the eviction battles of the 1930s where people resisted?
No, I can't. The only resistance and battles that I can remember is at 6 o'clock after the pubs closed on a Saturday night.
Tell us about that. They were quite notorious.
Well, on the corner of Kettle Street and Elizabeth Street, Redfern, there was a hotel called the Australian 11. On the opposite corner of Kettle Street and Elizabeth Street was a billiard room. Now, I don't know if you've experienced the type of billiard room that I'm speaking of, but there was a billiard room and there was possibly 6 or 8 big billiard tables in there, and the people used to gather there, but the pub used to be open and close at 6 o'clock. Now, the battles that I've experienced in Redfern are nothing like the battles and the things you read about today. In those days, it was a fair go for everybody. If I only thought about it this morning, it's quite interesting, and possibly you may never have heard of it. Certainly your daughter wouldn't have heard of it. And most certainly, a lot of young people today wouldn't have heard of it. But round about 5 o'clock, maybe they were getting a bit tiddly, you know, from 10 o'clock in the morning, round about 5 o'clock, somebody would get the bright idea, he'd down his drink, and he'd tip his glass upside down and sit it on the counter. And if you did that, you were declaring that you were the best man in the pub, and I'll take anyone on. And never, ever did I ever see that happen, that somebody didn't say, right, I'm going to show you you're not the best man in the pub. And out they'd go. Now, they'd either walk across the road to Redfern Park or out into Kettle Street. Everybody would take their grog and they'd walk out with their schooners or middies or whatever they had, and they'd form a circle around them and they'd tear the line and into it, bare knuckle and go. And the difference between then and today is that if I was having a fight with a guy, I was one of the participants, not that I ever did, but if I was, and he whacked and he was too good for me and I says, I've had enough, if I went down and says, I've had enough, he'd walk over and grab me and help you up, shake hands, into the pub and have a drink together. And by the same token, if two men were fighting and one was getting the better of the other and anyone out of the crowd stepped in other words, if it was 2 against 1 or 3 against 1 or like the cowards of today, 6 and 7 against 1, that would never be allowed. They'd get a terrible hiding off the crowd. It was 1 against 1, a fair go. And some Saturdays there were different guys from the area that would turn around and tip their glass up every Saturday afternoon, and maybe the same bloke that did it last Saturday would turn around and say, well, I told you last week you wasn't the best, get outside, and away they'd go again, you see. And this happened quite often. Up on the corner, I discussed it with you later on the corner of Redfern Street and Walker Street, was the Albert View. And it was quite commonly called the Blood House at times. And there were terrific fights up there. There'd be nothing to have. And right opposite was a Greek church. And it didn't seem to matter. There might be 5 or 6 fights going at the one time, you know, a couple in Redfern Street and 3 or 4 down Walker Street and one in the pub. But they used to have their offsiders and they'd all, but everyone would go out to make sure it was a fair go. As I said before, there was never any of this cowardly stuff like 3 and 4 onto one. Or they never ever picked a knock down an old woman like some of the cowards today do, you know. That was never on. It was always a fair go. And the publican would turn around and say, right, hang on, blue on, ball out. Out they'd go at the pub and into it, you see. But as soon as one bloke had had enough, the crowd would say, right, a fair go, he's had enough. They'd shake hands, walk inside, and have a beer together.
And why was the place called the Blood House? What made it worse than the others?
Well, I don't know that it was any worse than the others. And I mean, I suppose at some time or another during some time of their life, the hotels, any one of them could have been called a Blood House, because with 6 o'clock closing and on a Saturday afternoon, it just seemed to be the general thing to do. There wasn't much else to do in those days.
And did all the kids and the women of the neighbourhood, this is all happening out in the street, so...
Yeah, they'd go out and have a look. Yeah, they'd crowd around and have a look, but they wouldn't interfere. Nobody interfered.
So what I'm getting at is, you were a child when this... Yeah. We're talking about late 20s and 30s. Sophie, you wouldn't have been in the pub because you were underage.
No,
so you witnessed this?
Yeah, I used to witness it, yeah.
And it wasn't frowned upon that the kids were standing around watching this? This was just part of life?
No, because everything was done fairly. I mean, the kids couldn't learn anything bad about it other than, you know, be able to handle yourself, look after yourself. If you live in Redfern, you've got to be able to look after yourself. But it was all done fairly. The kids, nobody was worried. I mean, they didn't have to stand there and watch a team kicking a man or something like that, or bashing him with a baseball bat or anything like that. It was a fair go. It was just a knuckle fight, and that was it.
Okay.
And when it was over, don't forget, the kids also saw them shake hands, arm around each other, and back into the pub for a drink.
It sounds like times were pretty tough. What did your family do for fun? Was there time out? Was there time for fun as a family?
Yeah, well, we had a, outside of my own family, my mother had a big family. She had five sisters, I think, and three brothers or something like that. I just forget now. And they had families, and we used to all make our fun. I was only thinking the other day, when I was a kid, the footpaths, they used to have sandstock gutters, right? And because of people walking on them, they used to wear out holler. And if there's a little bit of an incline or something, we used to race marbles down there for hours and hours and hours. I'd have a green one, and somebody else would have a red one, and someone else have a blue one. And they used to run down in the gutter, and we used to spend hours doing that sort of thing. There was many, many things, you know, like...
What about, do you remember, recall any time going out with your parents, your dad and your mum, and your...
Many, many times, yes. My dad got, he had motor cars, and we used to go out. Prior to that, I'd like to tell you one thing about it. Over in Walker Street, Redfern, there was a family named Woods. And there was Nellie Woods and Pearlie Woods with the two daughters. And Nellie Woods she had that problem that children get, I can't think of it, but anyhow, she was a huge girl. She was only young.
Overactive thyroid?
No. She's a little bit backward. I can't think of the word that I'm looking for, but okay. However, she was a little retarded, not much, but she was a lovely girl, and she couldn't work, she couldn't do anything, and she was a huge girl, very short, but very large, and a very sick person. Her sister Pearlie was older than her, and she used to go to work, and of course her mum and dad, she lived with her mum and dad there, and they lived next door to us. And every morning you'd go out, and Nellie would be out there leaning on the gate and saying good morning to everybody as they went past. Everybody loved Nellie Woods. And Nellie's father used to work. I've got an idea it was for, I'm not sure of the name, but I think it might have been Bennett and Woods or one of those places, I can't recall. But he had a horse and a cart, and it had the printing around the side, and for the life of me, I can't recall what it was. But come Sunday, about 10 or 15, maybe 20 people, including us next door, would pile on the back of the cart, and off we'd go for a picnic. And he'd take us out to Carr's Park. It's just out past, you know where Carr's Park is, out near Hurstville, and down, and there was a picnic ground there. And in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, he'd have to get us all back on and jog us back with the horse and cart and take us back to Redfern. We had many, many happy times, you know. There was lots of things that he used to do. We used to make our own fun. I don't know, we had billy carts. We used to make them ourselves, or our dad would make them with a couple of bits of wood and old ball bearings and put them on and a bit of rope to steer it with, and we used to race those down the hills and things like that. Our mum and dad used to join in with like playing tennis or something like that.
Where would you play tennis?
Redfern Park, Redfern Oval, right opposite South Leagues Club, on the corner of the park, there used to be, I'm pretty sure it was tennis courts, failing that it was a bowling green, but there was a clubhouse, a weatherboard clubhouse there. And I vaguely recall that there were tennis courts there. But in latter years, when I come home from the war, I joined the Redfern RSL, and that's where the Redfern RSL started, in the old clubhouse on the corner of the Redfern Oval in Castlereagh Street. I vaguely recall it. I could be wrong, but if it wasn't tennis courts there, it was bowling greens. But they went away, and we used the RSL started there until they moved over to near Redfern Station with a bigger club.
You showed me a photo earlier of the snake pit out at La Perouse.
Yeah.
Was that something that you went to often?
Oh, yeah. Quite often we went out around there. We used to go to Yarra Bay. Because I believe in the younger days, my mum and dad, that used to be a favourite spot of theirs, was Yarra Bay, and not only mum and dad, but you see, in their younger days, they didn't have the transport to get around like we've got today, and you used to go to Yarra Bay, and La Perouse would be quite a distance to go and have a picnic or something like that and come home before dark, and that sort of thing, and Cars Park, you'd go down to Manly or somewhere like that. It was a big day.
And did you mostly get there by car?
Yes. Quite a few times we went by tram.
Did your father always have a car that you remember?
If he didn't have a car, he nearly always had a truck.
So he must have been quite affluent through the Depression, really, to have...
No, he didn't have it in those days. He was working at the hotels, and he was working at Holbrook's source. I'm talking about afterwards.
Wow. After that. So not during the Depression years or the 20s, or later 30s?
Mm.
They'll be becoming more common then.
Mm. My dad bought his first new motor car in 1937, and it was a Chev. And he was the only one in Walker Street, Redfern, that owned a car at that time. So.
Did you ever go to the beach?
Yeah. We used to, my grandmother, a little bit later on, when I was probably 12 or 14, she used to live at Manly. And we used to always go to Manly. Get on the ferry and go over to Manly and spend the day on the beach, or spend the weekend down there with my grandmother and the rest of the family. All the family used to go down. My mum's five sisters and two brothers, three brothers, whatever, and all their kids, we'd all go there and then and pop out a big home there with a big veranda around the outside. That's because you didn't have to worry about locking your doors and things at those times. You could sleep on the open veranda and nobody'd touch you, nobody'd come near you. You know? Those days were the good old days as far as I'm concerned. A lot of people won't agree with me, but I'd like to see them back again. Because there were so many things that went on in those days. And you talk about food and what did we eat and those sort of things. I mean, it was quite a common occurrence to have a knock on the door and it'd be one of the kids from next door or across the road. Mrs. McDermott, Mum said, you got a cup of sugar you could lend us. You know, and you give them a cup of sugar because the next day you might have to run across and get a cup of sugar off them or something, a couple of spoonfuls of butter or a glass of milk or something like that. It was quite a common thing for people because they'd run out and the shops would be closed because we didn't have 24-hour shopping and those sort of things in those days.
You mentioned earlier, I think, that your mother's... When you were born, your parents were living with your mother's parents.
Yeah.
Were your grandparents, even when they moved, was there a close association with your grandparents? Were people in and out of each other's houses?
All the time. You know, I was born on the 9th of December in 1925. And I'll give you an idea what it was like. My cousin Jeannie was born on the 12th of December, 1925. I was born downstairs, she was born upstairs. Now, Jeannie's family consisted of about seven or eight kids, you know, like that was my brother's daughter. And they had eventually had about seven or eight kids. They were a big family and we're always close. Now, my grandmother and grandfather's house was the focal point of the family. That's where everyone went, the whole lot. Whenever you went there, there could be 50 or 60 people there, including all the kids and aunties and uncles and cousins and, you know. So, yeah.
Did you say Jenny was born in 1925? That's when you were born.
Yes. She was born 3 days after me in the same house.
Oh, right.
They lived there also.
Oh.
Because there was probably... There may have been, as you can realise, I was only born there. I wouldn't have lived there when I was born because I just come into the world. But there might have been two or three of the other mums, brothers and sisters married and living there too. It was quite a large house. They're still there, the houses. But it was quite a large house. But that was quite common in those days for big families to live in the one house.
What can you remember of the evenings? As a child, say, you know, you're 8 or 10 years old, did you have your main meal in the evening?
Yes.
And what would that be, generally speaking?
Well, on Friday night, every Friday night of my life for many, many years, it was fish and chips.
Were your family Catholic? Oh, one of them.
My dad was, but not practicing.
Did most people have fish on Friday night, whether they were Catholic or not?
I don't know about the fish on with Catholics, because it never entered into our house, but I know that most people had fish. In between Walker Street and Moorhead Street, in Phillips Street, there was a little fish shop. And I'm in a little fish shop. And on Friday night, people would be queued up down Phillips Street waiting to get into that fish shop. It seemed to be a favourite meal on Friday nights, hot fish and chips. And I can recall that year in and year out, Friday night, fish and chips.
And what about other nights?
Well, I suppose it was, I don't recall really at that young stage. But we always had something.
Did your parents like their work?
I don't know. My father certainly liked his work. My dad liked his work. He was working for himself in latter days, and he was a very good worker because he worked in the bars and the hotels for this Mr. Luscombe, who had hotels and things in the city, and he worked there as a barman, and then when the showground came on, my dad used to be put in charge. There might be 10, 15 bars at the Royal Easter Show, and my dad was managing a lot of them. We wouldn't see my father for just on a month when the Royal Easter Show came on. He'd be out there preparing things, and after it was over, he'd be out there clearing it up, because the show went for about 10 days, I think, but he was a week or 10 days either side of that, you know, for the time that the show took. And eventually he worked at the races for this Mr. Luscombe, because he had bars at the race courses too. And Dad finished up manager of a lot of those bars. I'd say my dad liked his work, and he was well respected by the people that did employ him at the time. But he didn't stay employed by people for too long, because he had the initiative to get into business himself, you know. And he made a very good, very, very good fist of it.
What about when he was at Holbrook's?
Well, when he was at Holbrook's, my mother was at Holbrook's too. I think that's where they met, actually. It's getting back a little bit further, because they never worked at Holbrook's for long during my early days. I mean, that was the end of their Holbrook's stance.
Well, where did your mother work after she left Holbrook's?
Mum worked at some of the... I think she worked at Sargent's Meat Pies. They used to have little pie shops around the town, and up in Redfern, down in Chippendale. Sargent's Pies had different little pie shops. She used to go in there, pie and peas or pie and potato, and a cup of tea or whatever, and my mother was a waitress at some of Sargent's. That's my dog. Come here, Oz. Come here. Be quiet. You can't get through there, Dopey. And go the other way, round here.
It's okay. She's a good boy. Was your mother happy at her work?
Well, I don't know about that.
Ask that question again.
Okay. Was your mother happy at her work?
Well, I suppose so. I don't know. She's certainly happy at her work as a mother.
So she came home when she
Mum
came
didn't
home.
Work for long after we were born. She might have worked for my sister, two and a half years older than me. She probably worked longer of her life than what she did of mine, you know.
Well, do you ever recall your parents being involved in industrial action?
No, they didn't. Well, as I say, Mum didn't work for long. And my dad got away to a pretty early start in his own business, in his life, you know. He was still only a comparatively young man when he started to work for himself.
Well, when your mother was at home, when she stopped work, can you describe your mother's working day?
My mother's working day was one of continual go, 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 washing, ironing, house cleaning. She was a bit of a, I don't know what you'd say, but she was a woman that everything had to be spotless and everything had to be spot on.
What time would she start, do you know?
Well, she used to start pretty early in the morning with me and my sister, and then later days with my brother and sister coming along. My mum had a pretty early start and a pretty late finish.
Did you have cooked breakfasts?
No, I think we had wheat bix and things like that, or porridge and, about the normal thing that everyone had in those days.
And what would you have for lunch?
At school and that, sandwiches.
And what about, say, on Saturday and Sunday or on the holidays?
We used to have a baked dinner on Sunday.
What would that be?
About the same as what you have on a baked dinner today. Only probably better cooked and much better without all the additives they put in it these days, you know, sort of thing.
So a leg of lamb or chicken?
Well, chicken at that time was a bit of a delicacy, you know. It's not like it is today. It's quite common today. Even my dog eats chicken today. Chicken was a little bit... Rabbit was more the average person's fare in those days.
Would that be a special meal at one of your baked dinners, or would that be...
Rabbit, you know, that was quite common.
That would be your Sunday meal, would it?
No.
That would be a weekday meal.
Rabbit in those days was much more like chicken is today. Everyone had it, you know. But that might be another interesting point for you. There used to be a guy come round with a horse and dray. And his name was Clary Burns in later days. I don't know who the guys were in the earlier days. And he used to sing out, "Rabbits, rabbits," and he'd sell you a pair of rabbits off the back of the back of the tray.
Would they still have their fur on?
No. They'd be all skinned and all ready to go, gutted and whatnot. Of course, there was lots of things like that. I mean, there was a wooden coal man used to come around and sell on wood and fire and open fires and coal and coke.
Did your mother cook on a fuel stove?
I think it was... we had fuel stoves in Phillip Street and Union Street. There was a fuel stove, yeah. Of course, they were quite common in those days too.
How did you heat your hot water?
Well, there used to be what they called a copper. It was... I don't know if this can be seen, but they're probably a couple of feet across and a couple of feet deep. They're made of copper. It was like a big pot. And it was set in brickwork. And underneath it, you used to light a fire. You'd fill that with buckets and you'd heat your water. And when the water was heated, you'd scoop it out with a bucket and pour it in the bath. And then when you had that in, you'd put a bit of cold in and you'd hop in the bath. I mean, you didn't have hot and cold taps. That wasn't on in the early days.
And how often would you have a bath?
Once a week, probably on Friday, I think, used to be bath day. Of course, I mean, my mum, while she wouldn't have a bath, a hot bath, my mum used to get us and strip us off and sponge us all over, you know, and put us in our pyjamas and into bed. But there's a lot of funny instances as far as a bath is concerned. And that's how they used to do their washing, by the way. They'd put all their clothes in the copper, put it up with water and light the fire and boil it up. Instead of no washing machines, they used to boil it and then pull it out and rinse it and hang it on the line. That's how you used to boil your clothes clean. But a funny incident I must tell you about in Walker Street, when we were living in Walker Street. The bathroom was at the back of the house, and the house was brick, but the bathroom was weatherboard. And then the backyard continued down, and behind the bathroom was an open shed with the copper fireplace and the tubs out there. Anyhow, there was a plague of rats, big rats. And my dad tried everything. And he wasn't getting on top of these rats. They were still winning the fight. So him and about three or four of his mates decided they'd come up with a brilliant idea. Our bathroom at the time, the baths weren't like they are these days. They weren't made out of plastics and stuff like that. They were all galvanised iron bars, and they were shaped. And anyhow, that was inside the bathroom, and then there was the weatherboard wall, and then the backyard. They came up with this brilliant idea. The rats were that cheeky, they were running around everywhere. You could see. So my dad and his three or four of his mates, they got hold of some shotguns. And they got in the backyard and they sat along the... There was a big shed at the back of the yard too. It was stables, actually. And they sat facing up the yard at night. And they had these, you know, the lights and things. And they'd see a rat and they'd go, boom! Well, everyone was loced inside the house. You couldn't get hurt inside. And, you know, they were going out there for about 3 or 4 hours. There's rats, dead rats everywhere. Now, they were quite happy with that. But the funniest part about it was, a couple of days later, come Friday, was bath night. And when we filled the bath up, there was 4,000 holes in the bath that had gone right through the weatherboard timber straight through the bathtub. It was leaking like a sieve. I never forgot that. I was a kid and I laughed for a fortnight over that. I thought it was fantastic. I didn't have to have a bath. They never even thought of that. What wasn't hitting the rats was going through the timber wall, only weatherboard. Yeah, that was a beauty. Dad had to buy a new bath. But, oh, gee, I thought that was funny. Yeah.
How did the war and... how did the depression affect your father and your mother?
Oh, well, like everyone else, it made life pretty tough. It was a struggle. I mean, you're asking me something now that's... it was very, very early days for me in the Depression. I think the Depression finished, I'm not sure, about 32 or something like that. I was 32, 33. Well, I was only 7 or 8 years of age, like something like that when it was over. I'm not exactly sure the date of the Depression. I know it was in that particular area and that time.
Would you describe your mother as a happy person?
Oh, my mother was extremely happy, always laughing and joking and the life of the party.
What about your father?
Oh, a little more reserved. As I said, he was... he was very reserved in that way.
Now, were there a lot of kids in the neighbourhood?
Yep.
How many when you say that?
Well, when you say the neighbourhood, Redfern's a pretty big place. It's a pretty big neighbourhood.
Well, the area that you sort of...
The area that I lived in, where I can remember most of the kids, was in the Walker Street area, when we moved to Walker Street, yeah. Oh, there was probably... I played with a group of about 15 or 20 kids, I suppose.
And did most families... Were they large? Like, how many kids?
Yeah, most of them were large families.
What's large?
Oh, well... I don't know, 4, 6, 8 kids, I suppose.
What were the ethnic mix over there? What was that?
Now, you've got to a very interesting point. Now, I don't know how well you know Redfern. But between Redfern, in Elizabeth Street, Redfern, from Cattle Street, which was the Australian 11 Hotel and Billiard Room corner, down to Phillip Street. That's about halfway, half the block between Redfern Street and Phillip Street. All along that portion there of Elizabeth Street, opposite the park, they were all Indians. And there was all old shops there with awnings on them, all the way along from the Australian 11 Hotel at Cattle Street down to Phillip Street. And all the old Indians used to sit out on butter boxes and that with big turbans on their head, and they used to all sit there smoking and their big moustaches and beards. All along there were all Indians. Now, I don't know, people talk today about immigrants and, and wogs and whatever you like. I don't know what they call them these days, but, you know, these were Indians, and nobody ever called them anything but Indians. Now, a funny thing, on the other side of the Australian 11 Hotel, from the Australian 11 Hotel up to Redfern Street, was all Lebanese people. And there were some very, very nice people that I got to know quite well. There was the Norman family, there was the Currys. I just can't recall all their names offhand because it's getting back a long way. But around Walker Street, which was the next street up from Elizabeth Street, our backyard used to run into a lane that run down into Elizabeth Street and was only two doors from where my dad had the scrap metal business. And there was a lady up the road, her name was Del Malouf. Now, she was Lebanese. And there was quite a few around there, and the ethnic, not as many as what there is today, but in that one little block, I'd say there was half and half, ethnic people and Australian families.
I believe there was a Lebanese church on Walker Street.
That was the one I'm talking about, yes. That's opposite the Albert View Hotel.
And who, do you know who the pastor was? Did you know that family?
His name was Shahidi.
Yeah.
I knew the son too.
Yes, and did you play with all those kids? Did all the kids from all the different, ethnic groups, was there free interaction?
Well, as I say, there wasn't, I don't recall a lot of ethnic kids. There was the Shahidi family, they were in the church. There was my cousin that lived two doors from there in Walker Street, he's John Judge, and myself, that's three of us, and a couple of other kids were in there. We used to get together quite a bit, yeah.
What about Aboriginal people?
Not too many at that stage in Redfern that I can recall. Not that I can recall. There were the odd ones here and there, but...
Do you know any names of the Aboriginal families from that time?
No, I don't. There was never the concentration in those days of Aboriginals in Redfern that there are now, particularly around Everly Street, and that just wasn't there.
Okay. Well, who were your friends?
Well, there was a young bloke over the road called Jimmy Gascoigne. He was a friend of mine, good mate. My cousin Johnny Judge, Nicky Shahidi, who was Sir Nicholas Neal. He was a pretty good friend of mine. I don't know if he'd still recall me. It's many years since I've seen him, many years. But when we were kids, we used to play together. And a stack of other kids, the Pettit kids. There was Les Pettit and his family down on the corner. I think there's three or four Pettit boys. And, look, there was plenty of kids around.
Okay, and what sort of families did they come from?
About the same as mine. Hard working, farmer, mother and father, or dad worked in a factory somewhere or something like that, you know. Hard working people.
And were you welcome to go into each other's homes?
You could go into each other's homes as pretty much as if it was your own home. There was... like I said before, you didn't go to bed with your windows closed and doors closed. You had to, hot summer's night, the doors were wide open, the windows wide open, nobody ever touched anything. And, you know, when you think about it, in an area like where we're living here in Walker Street, it reminds me very much of Neighbourhood Watch these days. And it was a Neighbourhood Watch without being formed into a particular group. It was just like Neighbourhood Watch. What they're trying to do with Neighbourhood Watch these days is caring and sharing together. And that's how it was. You'd borrow a cup of tea, or you'd borrow a half a cup of sugar, or you'd borrow a teaspoonful of salt, or whatever, you know what I mean? Half a loaf of bread. And everybody did it. It just wasn't us or them. Everybody did it. Everybody did it. And they all shared and cared together. And if anyone was sick, good God, you'd have a house full of people there trying to help. And some, the neighbours from across the road would be washing up while Mum was looking after the baby and all that sort of thing, you know?
What do you mean when you... But people just didn't go into people's houses and take half a loaf of bread or anything.
No. They used to knock on the door and they used to say, Mum sent me over and said, have you got half a loaf of bread, please? Yeah, well, yeah, sure. You know, because next week, as I said earlier, you might find yourself without half a loaf of bread. You'd go over and borrow half a loaf of bread off them.
Were people very private about their lives and about their families and their troubles?
Well, things were different in those days to what they are now. I'm not going to suggest that things didn't happen in those days that happen now, because they did, but things happened behind closed doors in those days, not like, you know, promiscuity and sexual goings-on that's happening today. I mean, nothing like that happened in the open. If your daughter got pregnant and wasn't married, well, I mean, that was a terrible thing, terrible, terrible thing.
Right. And what would happen?
Well, I wouldn't say people would scorn it, but people would be, they'd be looking over the top of their glasses and, what a dreadful thing to happen and all that sort of thing. And of course you felt much the same about it too, because, but it was your daughter or something like that, you know what I mean? Not necessarily my daughter, but today, people don't take any notice of that sort of thing.
It was a disgrace, was it?
More or less. It wasn't very ladylike, you know. It was a bit of a disgrace, yes. I wouldn't say a disgrace, but it was scorned and frowned upon, you know.
So if that happened in a family, would it be sort of covered up as much as possible?
Yes. Yes.
Ever hear of abortions happening?
Very rarely. Oh, I would. No, I can honestly say no.
Well, getting back to when you were a bit younger, hopefully, and didn't know about these things. When you were kids, like 8 or so, what did you and your mates do? What did you do together?
Well, we raced marbles down the street. We did opposite our place in Walker Street, Redfern, used to be a big open paddock. It was a vacant block of land. And they used to have big concrete pipes. I suppose I better talk, I don't know, 1.5 metres high. You know, great big water pipes, I think, concrete. We used to run in and out of them and play in and out of them and climb over them and hide and seek. And you'd play basketball, not basketball, you'd be throwing tennis balls or playing cricket out in the street or with a lump of wood, you know. Nobody had flash cricket bats and things like that.
Can you remember any adventures that you had?
No, not particularly. Only in the, maybe when I was a Boy Scout and I went away for the weekend with the Scouts and went up to Warrenoa River, and the Scoutmaster had a little putt-putt boat, and we thought it was fantastic. We thought we were Vikings and every other sort of thing, you know, and just going up Warrenoa River and a boat. That was terrific. We never ever saw those things.
Well, before, when I was talking to you, you mentioned about kids knocking off the lead from the roofs of houses.
Did I mention that?
Yeah, you did.
Did I? Ah, well, there were kids. No, it's no petrol. But it was quite common for the kids to get up on the, particularly down the railway sheds down off Exhibition Park off Cleveland Street, and they used to get up and pinch all the lead flashing and stuff off the roof and go and sell it for scrap metal, you know, and get a few bopter. That's about as much as I know about it.
What did you do with the money?
I didn't do anything with it. I didn't get any of it.
Oh, right. But when kids got hold of money in those
days? They'd run around and buy cigarettes or something like that, I suppose.
Did you go to the movies?
Yeah, we used to go up to the Lawson Theatre, which is not there anymore. We used to go to the Empire. That was in Lawson Street, Redfern. We used to go to the Empire Theatre on the corner of Cleveland Street and Walker Street. That's still there, but it's not a picture theatre now, I don't think. Yeah, we used to go to the theatre. Yeah.
What was your favourite movie?
In those days? Oh, I don't know, Tom Mix, I suppose, or one of the cowboy pictures.
Well, how far did you roam as a kid when you were hanging out with your friends and out of the eyes of your parents, out of their vision?
Not very far. We could find enough trouble around the local area without going too far.
What's some of the trouble you found?
Well, I suppose you think, you know, I don't know, really. You know, we didn't get into much trouble.
No, I know you never got into much trouble, probably because you weren't caught.
Well, like, they used to pinch the lead off the roofs and things like that. I think they snitched a bit off the Lebanese church up in the corner of Walker Street. And I won't tell you who was involved in that, but there was a few involved in that. But, and quite surprisingly, some people that would give you a surprise who was involved in it. But anyhow, that happened sort of thing. I don't know that they got much off. I was only told these things, you see. Mm.
Did you go scrounging around the factories? There were a lot of factories there, and there'd be all sorts of...
Well, what we used to do, in those days, you'd get money for bottles, empty bottles. But not, I'm not talking about just scrap. If you could find a lemonade bottle, a Shelley's lemonade bottle, or a Marchant's lemonade bottle, or a ginger beer bottle or something, you'd take it back to the shop, and they'd give you a penny or tuppence or an empty bottle, you know, and they'd reuse them. They'd take them all away and wash them and reuse them. I don't recall anything. See, money wasn't a big problem in those days because there wasn't any around. Everyone had about the same amount, nothing.
Were there any places you were not allowed to go?
You mean by my parents or?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I just can't recall them, but yeah, I can recall of being vetoed on different, you know, spots by Dad, you know.
And what would that be?
Well, for instance, those concrete pipes that I spoke of, I used to climb, my dad used to say, keep it out of there, you'll break your bloody leg. You'll kill yourself in there, you'll fall off them or something like that. And sure enough, one day I fell. There's the scar there that I got, because I had to run. My dad used to work at the back of where we lived, and they run through and got him. Mum had my sister a dancing lessons or something or other, and he had to run through and burn his big leg up. Well, he said, I told you, you know. Well, I didn't go over there too often after that.
Were there any people that you had to avoid?
Oh, yeah, there'd be a few drunks rolling around the place, you know, on Saturday nights and that sort of thing. You always kept away from them.
Were you actually, as a child, out on the streets in the evenings, like Saturday nights?
No, when I say Saturday nights, I'm talking around about 5 and 6 o'clock in the afternoon, you know. That's when the pub's closed. You've got to remember that the pub's closed at 6 o'clock, so it wasn't very late on Saturday night when the pub's closed and when the drunks start to get around. Of course, at those times too, there used to be a police patrol, a wagon. They used to call it a paddy wagon. And they used to drive around grabbing all the drunks and shot them in the back of the wagon and take them out to the police station and lock them up for 4 hours, you know, for being drunk.
Can you remember any of the local police?
No, not in my early days. Not when I was a kid, no.
Did you hear any stories about them?
Yeah, I heard a lot of stories about them, like, look, out here comes the coppers and everyone at Scarpy, you know, and nobody ever trusted a policeman when I was a kid. Vastly different today to what I know today. I suppose I know half the police at Redfern Police Station and they're all pretty good blokes.
And why weren't they trusted in those days?
Oh, well, there was a, you know, I mean, I think it was just the times. That's the way things were. Police, coppers are no good, and look out here, they come, the bludgers, you know, all this caper.
Were there any people that you were particularly encouraged to be with, you know, who were locally admired and thought to be a good influence?
Not really, no.
You're
talking about my younger days?
Yes.
No, not really.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned before a bit about you going to school. How did the teachers treat you generally? You mentioned that one that...
Pretty strict. Most of them were pretty strict, but most of them were pretty good. There was only the one guy, and he was a pretty tough man.
And did most of the local kids go to the state schools, or...?
No, at the time, I think Mount Carmel used to be the main Catholic school, and my cousin used to go there. Lived up near the Lebanese church in Water Street. And just we used to get around together. And I used to wag school occasionally and go to school with him at Mount Carmel for a day or two, you know, just to get a bit of a breakaway. Or, I don't know.
How did they cope with that?
I don't know how we managed it, even. I can't recall, but I can recall going there, and I got sick and tired of being up and down off my knees all day, and that's as I'm going back to George Street or wherever I was at the time, you know.
Can you remember any... What were the big events of the year for a kid?
The big events of the year were South Sydney football, for a start, while the football season was on. That was the big event of the year.
Did you go to the games?
Every game I could get to, I did. And they used to play right opposite where we... Because we were on one side of the street and they were on the other, the Oval, Redfern Oval. They used to play at Redfern Oval. Sure, yeah, even right up to latter years. And I'm talking about even when I come home from the war, up to the early 50s and that, I used to go to all the games.
And were they really popular with amongst the local people?
Oh, well, if you didn't have a red and a green eye, you wasn't from Redfern.
What else? What other would be events of the year?
I think one of the biggest events as far as the kids were concerned was Cracker Night. You know, we used to... Families used to buy us all the crackers and they'd give us spending money, or we'd go and buy the crackers or something. And we used to buy what they call a basket bomb. It was a square one, about that square, and it was wrapped in cane, you know, and had a wick. And I used to call them a basket bomb. And we used to run around sticking them in all people's, whacking them in everybody's letterbox. Blow their letterbox up, you know. We'd have to see the letterbox, or we'd put them under a kerosene tin. You know what a kerosene tin is? And we'd cut, they'd have, a lot of the families used those for buckets in those days because they couldn't afford to go and buy a bucket, but they used to use an empty kerosene tin with a bit of wire for a handle, you know. And we used to grab them and take them out and turn them upside down with a basketball on it. And when the basketball went off, the kerosene tin used to go about 100 foot in the air. And the big bonfires, we used to light them in the middle of the road at Walker Street and all the streets. They used to, you'd be piling on the wood all day they'd be piling things on the bonfire, and they used to light the bonfires. And it'd be nothing to have a bonfire as big as this room, and then just set her away, all the way she'd go, and oh, there'd be crackers and Tom Thumbs and starlights and sparklers and jumping jacks, and oh, that was a big night, big night.
And all the families from the street?
Oh, everyone in the street would be out, yeah. Everyone in the street would be out. Beyond, yeah. So we used to cause a bit of trouble with our basket bombs in the letterboxes. Because they used to all be made out of light tin, light metal. And when you let them go, they'd just go boom and blow them apart. And they used to chase us and abuse us for weeks. You know, about blowing their letterboxes up.
Were there other events? I have heard of a circus going to Redfern. Do you recall?
There used to be a circus. Yeah, there used to be a circus go to, I'm just not sure. They used to go down to, I think Worth Circus used to go into Prince Alfred Park. I'm pretty sure that's where they used to go. Not into Redfern Park, into Prince Alfred Park down near Cleveland Street School. Yeah, I went to the circus there many times. And also in that park at that time was the exhibition building. It was a huge old building. And they used to have a museum in there. And then they got rid of the museum and they opened it up as a roller skating rink. And I went there many, many times. Well, they eventually pulled it down and got rid of it, and that's where your ice skating rink and your pool is these days in Prince Alfred Park.
What kind of a museum was in there before?
They had aeroplanes and some of Kingsford Smith's aeroplanes and things like that. It was I don't know if it was a war museum or a... I'm just not sure now, but I know they had some of the aeroplanes.
Did local kids go there quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. Yes, they did.
And was it free entry?
Oh, that I can't say. I don't think so, but that I can't say. I can't recall.
Interview with Ted McDermott, 5th of October 1994, take two. We're talking about big events in the year and what kids did. You said you used to go to roller skating.
Yep.
One thing I wanted to know is, was there any sort of social distinction between, say, the Redfern kids and the Newtown or Alexandria kids?
No, not between the Redfern, Newtown, Alexandria kids, but maybe if you struck somebody from the North Shore, it was a little bit different or something like that, or the eastern suburbs.
Did you ever meet kids from the North Shore or eastern suburbs?
On rare occasions.
But there was never... It seems... I have this impression that kids stuck together and had their friends from their own local neighbourhood.
That's right. And you didn't wander too far adrift, you know. You didn't get too far. We used to go to Manly quite a lot. I don't know that it worried the kids so much. It might have been some sort of a stigma for the adults when they said, you know, if anyone says, oh, where do you live? And they say, Redfern or something like that. But generally I found that the people of Redfern didn't care what other people thought outside the area. Most people in Redfern got on all right together. There were the odd, I suppose there were different groups that were antagonistic towards each other and that, but I didn't strike it much.
Well, what groups would be antagonistic toward each other?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. That it's a bit too... I never heard anyone had anything bad to say. We had, as I said before, the Indians and the Lebanese. And I really can't... the Lebanese people, I had quite a bit to do with them. And I, even in my latter years, when I was working for Dad in a scrap metal, I had we had quite a few of them working for us, and I can never ever recall any friction or anything like that between us because they were Lebanese. Never. The Indians, of course, they were a different group altogether. I don't even know what they did. They had shops, and I don't even know what sort of shops they were. You know, they never interfered with us, and we never interfered with them that I can recall.
But they were like a separate group.
Yeah.
Whereas the Lebanese were more integrated.
Yes.
Hmm. when I've been talking to other people, some of them have been. Did the Redfern kids, say, ever play cricket or any sporting competitions against kids from Waterloo or?
I suppose they did more at a school level than anything else. I would imagine. For instance, I wasn't allowed to play football. My mother wouldn't let me play football because she reckoned it was too rough. And I can't ever really. I was like, even in latter years, I went into the school choir and things like that. That's where my interests were, you know, like rather than sporting. But that's not to say that I didn't do sports during my lifetime. I did, and I got quite a long way along the line, you know. I did get quite a long way along the line in most sports. I could play tennis quite well. I was, if the war hadn't interrupted when it did in 1939, I'd have been a roller skating champion, speed skating champion, because I was very, very good at it. And even as a young age, I used to go to St. Paul's Church down on the corner of Cleveland Street and Regent Street. It's still there. And the scouts used to meet there. I just forget, I think it was a Wednesday night. And after that, I used to put my skates on at the scout hall and skate right through Prince Alfred Park. And I'd be taking my shirt off as I went. And I had a T-shirt sort of thing underneath. And I used to skate in to the skating rink and straight out onto the floor and get on my mark in a race. It started at 9 o'clock or whatever, you know, and I had to be there then. I used to skate through the park and skate in, and then I won my share of races and things like that, and I was going quite well at it. And that was one sport that I participated in. I met my wife at roller skating, only it wasn't down there, it was at the sports arena in Surry Hills when I came home from the war. I was skating around, and my wife and her friends always thought I was a bit of a ratbag because I was always whizzing here and whizzing there. And I played roller hockey with the South Sydney roller hockey team. But I was skating around backwards, and I bumped into this girl and knocked her over. And I turned around, it was my wife. I didn't know who she was at the time. And my mum happened to be at the skating rink that particular night, sitting on the side. And my wife looked up at me and she said, "You knocked me over." And I says, "I'm sorry." She said, "Well, pick me up." So I picked her up and on her feet, and I hung onto her hand and I skated across to my mother. And I said, "Mum, this is the girl I'm going to marry." And sure enough, I did. Now, there you go. Whether I meant it at the time or not, I can't recall, but I did. She's the girl I married, and that was at roller skating. But, you know, there were quite a lot of things. We used to go swimming, we used to go to Coogee Aquarium, we used to go to Coogee. My dad used to get us up at 6 o'clock in the morning, some mornings, 5 o'clock in the morning, and take us out to Coogee, and we used to swim in the surf for an hour before he went to work, and then he'd come home. You know, I mean, people still do these things these days, but they did them in those days too. But the difference is that people can't or couldn't afford to do those sort of things too often in those days. But I always had my money to go to. I used to pay into the roller skating rink. And my mum and dad used to always give it to me. That was my sport. My sister played tennis, and in latter years I played tennis. I used to play in the South Courts round here at Rosebery. They've gone now. They've disappeared. But I got up into a reserve grade round there as a young boy. And I could have carried that on, but I didn't. I don't know. Things just changed.
Was it the war?
And well, the war had most things to do with it, yes. The war disturbed a lot of things in a lot of people's lives. I went overseas, and when I came back, I was a few years older, and I don't know if my interests had changed or if I'd changed or what, but I continued to roller skate, and as I say, that's where I met my wife. I had bicycles. We used to do a lot of bike riding, you know, like not racing or anything like that, but we used to ride bikes everywhere. We used to go to the pictures quite a bit. We used to go to a lot of dances.
Where were the dances at?
Over at Surreyville in City Road, up near Grace Brothers there in City Road, just off Cleveland Street.
At what age? When did you start going to dances?
Oh, after I came home, I don't know.
Oh, the war, after the war.
No, I went to a few before I went to the war, 17, 18. And when I came home, well, that's the sort of things we used to do.
Okay. Well, look, getting back to, say, the 30s, how would you describe the neighbourhood? What was Redfern like then?
Well, Redfern, in my young days, I wouldn't say it was a salubrious sort of a suburb. Salubrious, yeah, whatever the word is, I might have the wrong word, I don't know if that's the right way. But everybody was, the homes, most of the homes were old place, dilapidated, not well kept. Outside, I'm talking about. Inside, they were kept as well as they could be kept and quite clean. Everybody washed their bed linen and stuff quite regularly. I can't ever recall. There may have been families that weren't too particular about it, but in our own family, in the very early days in my grandmother's home, I know the whole house was spotless, and I know when we moved, Mum and Dad and the family moved on their own into our own homes, I know they were spotless there, and by gee whiz, if they weren't, I was in trouble. But we were always brought up that cleanliness is next to godliness sort of thing.
Was it a mixture of residential and industrial?
Yes. Now, for instance, I was born in Castlereagh Street, on the Phillip Street side of the South Sydney Leagues Club. Now, next door to the terrace of houses where I was born, there was a big carrying yard. It was horses and carts and trucks, very early model trucks, with a big galvanised iron fence around it and big double gates and just an ash. I think they put ashes and hosed them down and made it hard, not concrete and all that. Was because of that's what everybody did in those days, because concrete and stuff wasn't as big a thing as what it is now. A little bit further down from South Sydney, around about where the South Sydney Leagues Club's parking area is, was a huge factory. And I've talked it over since you rang me with a number of people, and I couldn't get a picture of the name. I could nearly write brick for brick. I could nearly draw the factory. And the name was in a huge letters, probably 4 or 5 foot high on the top of the building. And I couldn't get a picture in my mind of the name of the place, and I've asked different friends of mine. And I rang my cousin that was born 3 days after me, and she couldn't recall it. She could recall the factory, but she couldn't recall the name. And lo and behold, yesterday morning, I walked out and sat down at the table, and the name went whack like that, and I saw it. It was Hunter's Shoes, and it was a big shoe factory.
Mm.
And lots of people used to work there. Now, a little bit further down the road from there, not far from there, was F.H. Faldings. And, of course, you've got to remember in this time that most of the carrying and carting was done by horse and cart. And I can picture the horses and cart getting along Castlereagh Street, going in out the gates with these loads of different stuff on them, you know, right opposite the park. And the park, I don't know if it's still there. I've been into Redfern Park, but never into the middle of it. I've been to the War Memorial on Anzac Day, and that's just on the corner there of the park. But in the middle, there used to be a fountain. I don't know if it's still there. And it used to have a steel spike fence around it, and that was always going, you know. And there was always some sort of activity in the park, and people walked in the park even late at night. You could walk there without fear. It wouldn't matter if it was 1 o'clock in the morning. You could walk through the park, and you wouldn't have any fear of getting molested or bashed or kicked or anything like that. Even women could walk through there on their own. Things had changed, you know. Things had changed. And I don't know if you know where the South Sydney Police Boys Club is on the corner of Phillip Street and Elizabeth Street. That's quite a huge building now. But prior to that, there was a family that used to have, originally in Walker Street, on the corner of Kettle Street and Walker Street, a little shop where a fellow named Claude Buck used to own it. He was an Englishman that came out here, a Pommy, and he came out here and he had a little family. And he used to have the moulds, and he used to make little lead soldiers, and his wife and all the kids and all would sit there painting after they come out of the mould. They'd paint the uniforms and things on them by hand. Well, eventually he got out of that and went round to the corner where the Police Boys Club is now, and there was a huge shop on the corner before the Police Boys Club, and that became Buck's Hamburger Shop. And it's one of the biggest hamburger shops I've ever struck in my life. And that used to be a focal point. It joined up with the Indians in Elizabeth Street. That's where it started, where they ended, and it went round the corner. And at the back of it was a wooden coal yard. Now, I don't know if you know what a wooden coal yard is, but that's where they used to sell firewood and coal and coke. And that was owned by the Clark brothers. That was Clarkey's Coal Yard. Okay? But Claude Buck and his wife and his young kids' families, they had that hamburger shop there for many years. Well, then they disappeared away from there. And many, many years later, and I'm going back probably 25 years ago, we went to the Central Coast, my wife and I. We went up there holidaying. We eventually bought a block of land up there. But who do you think had a big shop in Tookley? Claude Buck and his wife. And we ran into and renewed the association all over again, you know. But, unfortunately, they've all passed away now, but their family's still up there.
And was it, in terms of economics, were most people working people, or were there professionals? Yeah, was there a mix of economic status?
Well, I was thinking about things when you, after you rung me, I was thinking about things and who, especially reading that that sheet that you gave me. And right opposite our place in Walker Street, there was a man named Mr. Raymond, and he was a jeweller. Well, people sort of used to look up to him because he always seemed to have a lot more money than everybody else. So I don't know if you'd call him a professional, whether a jeweller in those days was a pretty good sort of a trade or business. But apparently he travelled, he lived in Redfern, but he travelled to his shop or wherever it was, and where that was I wouldn't know. But he was quite a nice old man. He was an old man.
Any others?
Not that I know of. I suppose at times a lot of them thought my dad was a bit, pretty well stacked up with his car and everything. He had a brand new car in 1937.
Did most people have cars?
Well, at the time I think we was about the only motor car in Walker Street. No, cars weren't. Gee, what did you talk about cars? Heavens above you, how many tapes you got if you want me to talk about cars? You know, like we had open tourers. And we used to have side curtains that fitted on the side to keep the weather out, and we'd go over the Blue Mountains or somewhere, and the fog would be that bad that one of my uncles or someone would walk along in front of the car with a hurricane lamp to make sure he didn't drive off the side of the road. And we'd be crawling along at about 2 miles an hour to get over the mountains at night time in the fog and that sort of thing. You couldn't see hand in front of you.
When you were a kid, did you go on holidays very often?
Yes.
Where would you go?
We'd go down to Lake Illawarra, mostly down to Lake Illawarra, camping. And we used to get, Dad used to drive us down, because as I say, Dad used to work at all the events that were on, like races and things. And he'd take us down and pitch the tent, put all the gear in the tent, and install Mum and us, the kids, and he'd have to drive back to Sydney to go to work, and we wouldn't see him till the next weekend, and we'd be sometimes down there for a month. You know, and he'd come down every weekend, and Friday night or Saturday or whatever, you know, on Sunday. I just can't recall when.
And you'd go to the beach?
Yeah, we'd spend a month or so down there on the beach. And I had my first ride in an aeroplane down there. On the beach there used to be a Tiger Moth. That was a two-seater plane, open plane. And it used to land, and the guy used to give joyrides. And that's where I had my first ride in an aeroplane, was on the Lake Illawarra Beach. So there's some of the things that used to happen, you know. And of course, when you went to a camping area like that and you were going there for year after year, just you used to find nearly all the same people there every time you went down, and everybody got to know everybody, like in Redfern. And they used to have the campfire every night, and we used to sit around the campfire, sing songs, and, you know, a bit of a, not a party, but a sing-song. And just swapping yarns, some of the old people would sit in and tell you tales. And that was a big thing in the old days too, when I was a kid. All the older people seemed to have a little tale they could tell you, you know, and they'd start talking and they'd say, and then of course you have to watch this fella because he used to sneak and make all the kids used to be sitting there and that was storytelling, you know, and they used to tell some good yarns too. I can't recall anything.
And did you go down there every January, did you?
December. Christmas, yeah. December into January.
Would you spend Christmas down at Illawarra?
Yeah.
Rather than with
not always. Oh, no. I tell a lie, I suppose. You you've refreshed my memory now. We used to spend Christmas with our parents and grandmother, and until they passed away, and then after that we didn't get together as a family as much as we used to with uncles and aunts, although we used to see a lot of each other nonetheless.
You mentioned before that kids for a bit of fun would scale the trams and hitch a bit of a lift.
Yeah, that's right.
Did kids get hurt doing stuff like that?
A lot of kids got killed doing it.
Really?
A lot of kids got killed doing it, yeah. Because I'm talking about the open toast rack trams, I used to call them. And the reason they called them a toast rack tram was you could get on from either side, and they had little compartments. There'd be a seat in each side, and you'd sit in, and then there'd be another compartment with a seat facing each way, and you'd go in and out a door either side. You was only supposed to get on and off one side. That's the side nearest the footpath. But you only had to slide the doors open on the other side, and you could go out the other side. Now, you could either scale the trams on the off side, which was the wrong side, and be very careful of the trams coming the other way, or you'd wait till the guard was down the back end of the tram and you'd jump on the front, or you'd wait till he went up the front and you'd jump on the back. And when he started to come down towards you, you'd bail out, you'd jump off. Generally, the guard used to say, "Hey, get out of there!" You know, they used to walk along, so they used to collect the fares. They had a bag on, over a strap over their shoulder, and they used to walk along, come to the compartment and say, "Fares, please." And he'd be standing out even in the rain, they used to be standing outside.
Did anybody you know get killed?
I vaguely recall someone, but I can't remember his name. Yeah.
And you just did it? Did you just do it for the dare?
Just for fun.
Fun.
Yeah.
What smells can you remember of Redfern?
Smells?
What do you associate in the 30s? What smells do you associate with the area?
Mainly cooking. And around where you lived. Because, everybody cooked in those days. It's not like today. They don't ring up and get a pizza and or TV dinners or things like that. Everybody cooked their meals, you know. There was no fast takeaways and that sort of thing. Actually, the Buck's Hamburger Shop was one of the first to change that way of thinking, you know, and that way of living. It was people used to go there and eat. They started to go there and eat, and then there was more hamburger shops sprung up everywhere and that sort of thing, and that was about the start of the
change. When was that? What year would you put on that?
I suppose that'd be 64, 65 years ago.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, I beg your pardon. Not Buck's Hamburger Shop, but I'm incorrect. It wouldn't be that long ago. I'm thinking it's about 54, 55 years ago,
okay.
That sort of thing.
what image or sight or image comes to your mind when you think of Redfern in the 30s?
Well, a lot of people walking places instead of riding, for a start, trams. Horses and carts, barefooted kids.
Were you barefooted?
Never. We were fortunate. We were lucky.
You mentioned earlier, before we started, about are you having a horse?
That's right.
How old were you when you got the horse?
I was about 14.
Oh, older, not as a young child.
13 or 14. Oh, I might have been a bit younger, I might have been 12. I got it when I lived in Walker Street.
Where did you keep it?
In a stable down the back. We had a big stable. All the houses running off Walker Street went right through to a laneway towards Elizabeth Street. And there used to be a back lane, and the houses on Elizabeth Street used to back onto that lane also. But we had the house, the bathroom, and the laundry facilities under the shed, then a yard, and then the big long shed in the back. Everybody had them. They were like stables. And I used to stable the horse in, bring him up the lane at the back and bring him into the stable and stable him there.
Where would you ride?
I used to get on him and I used to ride over to Centennial Park and ride around Centennial Park. There was nowhere else to ride. I mean, you've got to understand there wasn't the traffic in those days that there is these days.
Did other kids have horses as well?
I never knew of anyone else in Redfern, any other kid in Redfern having a horse.
You were lucky?
Yeah, I was extremely lucky. Because Mum did me up in jodhpurs and you know, we had a pretty good life.
Can you remember any sounds that you would associate with Redfern?
No, only the broadcast of the race, isn't it, on a Saturday afternoon, you could hear them everywhere.
Was there, people were big gamblers?
Well, I wouldn't say they were big gamblers, but most people were gamblers, yeah.
What about drinking, drinkers?
Oh, pretty heavy there, that. But, I just have, I didn't know too many guys that didn't, you know, get off the tram and go and have a couple of beers before they went home and that sort of thing, but...
What major changes have you seen?
Well, all of Redfern Oval changed for a start. I mean, that's all been fenced in and big hills put right around it and that sort of thing. There was a few little mounds around it and that in the early days. I think the old grandstand's still there and that sort of thing, but that's changed dramatically. The big change is in Castlereagh Street, south, all that Hunter Shoes Factory and Faldings and that, they're all gone and they've got a big leagues club there now. Over in Elizabeth Street where the Indians and Lebanese people were and up where the Lebanese church was and the Albert View, the Bloodhouse was, that's all gone and there's all high rise and flats and even right down to the South Sydney Police Boys Club. That's about the only original thing that was there.
When did the major changes start?
Oh, gee, that's... I don't know. I suppose it could be... I don't know. I can't recall how far back that was. Been there a while now.
Was there a time when locals started to move out of the area?
Well, we moved out of the area, and most of the people that I knew and that we were involved with around the area, they were still there when we moved, and when they moved, I just wouldn't know. We went from Walker Street out to Rosebery.
And why did you move?
Well, Dad bought a house out there.
Oh, right.
That was the first house he ever bought.
And why didn't he buy one in Redfern?
I wouldn't know. I never ever asked him.
Okay. What's your happiest memory? As a child?
As a child?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it was having the family that I had.
Okay, what about your saddest memory?
One of my saddest memories, and I wouldn't say it was the saddest, but one of the saddest memories that I can recall, my grandmother's mother lived in Moorhead Street. That's the next street over from Walker Street. And she lived alone, and she died when she was 99. And she lived in this little cottage. And as a kid, I don't think ever a week went by that I didn't go up there, not only me, but all the cousins and all, I used to walk up and see. She was a lovely old woman. And used to go and talk and sit there. She used to mesmerise me. She'd be sewing beads on doilies and things like that. And, you know, with the glasses on her nose like this. And she'd be sitting at the table at the front window. And all dark. The house was dark, except for the light coming through the window, and she used to sit there, and I used to sit there and talk to her for hours. She was a lovely old thing, and anyhow, she died at 99, and that upset us all. That was a very sad time for me, because I miss my granny Ella, and her name was Hella, and you remember I showed you the tightrope walker? That was her, it was his mother, too, and it was my grandmother's mother. And life just didn't seem the same after that with our granny Ella. 99 she died.
And how old
lived
were
on
you?
Her own right till the death, right till the finish.
And how old were you when she died?
Oh, gee. I don't know, I suppose I was 12 or 13 or something. I couldn't say for sure.
And what's your most vivid memory?
Of what? Childhood?
Mm.
If I told you, you'd laugh.
Mm.
Well, when we went to school, we used to wear, sometimes, my mother was one for always dressing us up and making us look, you know. And you used to get knickerbockers or whatever they call them and tuck them into your socks. Kids used to call them poop catchers. And I had my hat on, it was raining one day, and I had my raincoat on, I had my poop catchers on. And coming home, I had an accident. I got as far as the Somerset Hotel coming up Phillip Street, and I had an accident. I couldn't wait till I got home, you know what I mean? I got caught out. Well, they truly became poor Goethes that day. And there's me standing there. I was terribly ashamed. My sister come up behind me leaving school. She come up behind me and she's rough. I said, go and get Mum, go and get Mum. I wasn't going to move.
How old were you?
I don't know. I suppose about 8 or 9, maybe 6 or 7 or something. I don't know. I don't recall, but I'll never forget that day. I was so ashamed. And I only had 100 yards to go to get home, you know. But I just... And here's me stuck outside that hotel standing there and I wasn't going to move. Oh, God, I was funny.
Okay, well, look, thank you very much. Is there anything that I haven't asked that I should have asked that you'd like to say?
No, I don't think so, Sue. I think perhaps the only thing I could add that you probably haven't added is that it's a shame to see that the world is like it is today. I don't know where the world's going to finish. I know where it started because I was there when it started for me. And most of my life I've enjoyed. It's only latter years that I haven't enjoyed. I still got my family. I've got 6 children and I've got 10 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren and my wife. We've got everything. I mean, we're not wealthy people, but we're quite comfortable. I got my little dog, as you can see. But there's sad things that happen in the world and it doesn't necessarily mean to be a death or anything like that. And I suppose I could be called an old square, but one of the things that hurts me most in this life, and it does hurt me, is to see that the women losing their femininity. And I don't mean all women. I don't think the women today are aware of what they're doing to themselves as far as their femininity is concerned. In my days, if a girl's skirt sort of blew above her knee, whoa, you know, but today, they don't care how they wear or what they wear. They don't care if they don't wear anything. I mean, I'm not knocking it. It's quite nice, but it's a shame to see it because I think they're losing their mystique. I often hear women sort of turn around and think that, you know, what's wrong with the guys today? A lot of women can't get boyfriends. Well, I think it's because the boyfriends, I think they're sick and tired. They've worn out their welcome with the girls and they're going back with the boys now, you know what I mean? Well, that sort of thing never happened in my day.
Okay.
And I think it's most unfortunate to see it, and I'd like to see it go back where they wear the long skirts and, you know, a bit of ankle was a thrill.
Okay. Well, look, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
It was good.